I'm Emily Alphen Johnson, VPR Digital Producer. Your time is valuable, so we've edited this episode for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Governor Phil Scott has just created a special cybersecurity advisory group that will look at ways to protect the state's databases from being hacked into for malicious and fraudulent purposes. How often does someone try to illegally penetrate a state database? Well, the governor says it happens a lot more often than you would think.
For context, since January, the state has seen over 3.3 million potentially malicious cyber attacks against our information resources. This is equal to 524 attempts, and I want to emphasize this is attempts, to subvert our defenses and gain unauthorized access every single hour for the last 9 months.
What are some of the major threats that face the state, and how does this new advisory group hope to thwart the activities of hackers in the future? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, John Quinn, who is the secretary of the newly created Agency of Digital Services, and Todd Sears from Vermont Emergency Management. Great to have you both here. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
John, before we discuss the goals of this new advisory group, I'm not sure that a lot of our listeners know that a new Agency of Digital Services and state government was created back in January. Why was this done, and what's the mission of the agency?
Sure. So the executive order that was issued by the governor back in January took effect in April 17th of this year. And what the governor was trying to accomplish is better collaboration, better standards, best practices in project management, in security, and reorganize all of the IT people under one organization so we can provide those better standards in a more consistent way to provide better outcomes for our agencies that we are partnered with.
So previously, was it done more on an agency-by-agency basis?
It was, yeah. And so, one of the issues that we saw with that was a lot of duplication. A lot of different agencies or the different agencies, different departments would contract with a vendor, and then another contract or another agency would contract with the same vendor. We would have duplicate systems. We have, several applications that do very, very similar things. And we think that not only is there potential cost savings, there's certainly efficiencies to be gained. And by adding those efficiencies and doing things a little better, we think that we can provide better security to those applications as well. Vermonters are going to be asked to use online services. We want to make sure they're secure and that citizens' data is safe.
So at that press conference where the governor signed the executive order creating the special cybersecurity group, it was mentioned that some of the hackers are phishing, a term that we want to understand better. Some are designing brute attacks. We also want to know what that means. Todd, let's start off with phishing. What's going on out there and what's really happening?
Yeah, so this is a great question, and it's ripe for clarification because the language that we use in this business can get kind of confusing sometimes. So I'm a pretty simple person, and I think about it in pretty simple terms. And when I think about an attack process, I think of it in three ways. Okay, three phases, I should say. One is you get into the system. Two is you do something bad once you're into the system. And three, you get out. So when we're talking about brute force attacks and we're talking about phishing and spear phishing and worms and viruses and these kinds of things, we're talking about getting into the system. So the first step, you have to get into the system to do bad things. So a brute force attack might be a perpetrator that puts together something maybe called, it's called a botnet, a bunch of computers that are slave computers, and it just has you, and it just sends information to a out there to a enterprise, to a system, and it looks for weaknesses. It's just sending a lot of stuff. These are probing actions. It sends a lot of activity out there looking for a weakness. It's like walking down a hallway with a bunch of locked doors, but one of those doors is probably going to be open at some point. You don't know what it is. You don't know what's in there, but you're looking for that unlocked door. And that's kind of what brute force attacks do. So to get into a system, there are techniques. The brute force kind of is one of those. But phishing is one that you hear quite a bit. And then spear phishing you hear quite a bit. And the way I think about those is one of them is broadband and the other one is narrowband. So a broadband, so an attack, a phishing attack might look like one bulk email that's sent out to a lot of different people. And it says, hey, if you want a free iPad, click this link. And boom, they click a link and it's bad. There's some kind of malware in there and they're inside. Spear phishing is a similar kind of thing, but it is very tailored and personalized to a specific target. So if I knew that the secretary had a hobby that was, I don't know, but it's like fly fishing or sword fighting or something, I might be able to tailor a message right to him to compel him to click on that link. It's more personalized and it's more targeted. So that's kind of the difference between phishing and spear phishing.
So do we have individuals who are using these computers and targeting, let's say, state employees and hoping that some state employee will open that link and allow this person to get into the system?
We do.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, yesterday, my chief financial officer received an email from someone else in state government, or it appeared that it was from someone else in state government. It had the name and title, and it was an elected official, and it said, "We need a wire transfer. We need some funds. You know, send us some money. You know, let me know what you need." But when you look closer at it, you can tell that the email address isn't from the person that said it was from. It was, you know, from a Yahoo account or a Hotmail account, and so we, you know, the. Through our security awareness training, our CFO looked at it and said, "I know this isn't accurate, so I'll go ahead and forward it on to the email team to make sure that we flag this type of thing going forward."
And this is the kind of thing that happens with personal computers. You know,
yes.
You'll get an email from a friend that says, "Hey, I'm stuck in Florida and I lost my wallet. Could you figure out a way? Can I get your credit card number or can you help me out in some way to get some cash?" And and that just seems to happen a lot these days.
Yeah, and please never do that. but that does happen in the public sector or the private sector too. And one of the advantages that we have here with the secretary and with ADS is that all of the departments, as far as I'm aware, once these notifications that there's some kind of phishing attempt going on an email, there's a notification that's put out to all employees to say, "Hey, watch out for this particular kind of email. It looks like this. Don't click the link."
Right. And we actually go one step further than that. We do that, but we also block from that specific address going forward.
Let's start with Stuart in Plainfield. Hey, Stuart, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Thanks a lot. Thanks for taking my call. So I have a little shopping list. I'll rip through them quickly. I'm just throwing them out there for talking points, and you guys can take, you know, one or none or all of them and talk through them as you please. So first of all, in the cybersecurity space, I don't think anybody's arguing that relate to this game. I think everybody knows that. And from a technical perspective, you were talking about it's about the database. It's completely about the database. We've been hardening the outside, the perimeter, and leaving sort of what we call the soft, chewy interior, i.e. we're not really watching the store inside. We're trying to block them all at the outside. You may as well call that the Maginot Line for a fairly apt analogy. Second of all, lack of compliance. So organization after organization after organization, they don't patch, they don't update, they don't do it in a timely manner. That's what happened to Equifax. That's why they're staring into their breach. They didn't patch. Third thing is multi-factor authentication. You guys can talk about that if you want. It's the idea that every time you – well, here's my example. Every time I log into Quicken now, they actually call my number to verify it's me. That's multi-factor authentication. That's really effective. The fourth, and maybe this is the biggest one, it's lack of actual – penalties that really, really hurt organizations from a monetary perspective for not doing these things, right? They're not compliant, and they're not going to step up to the plate until, by law, they really, really get financially dinged. And I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you so much.
All right, Stuart, thanks very much for your phone call. John?
Yeah, I would address his comment about being late to the game. I don't think it's specific to Vermont. I think all states are dealing with this now. I think all small businesses are dealing with this right now. And citizens, you know, the sophistication of threats changes every day. So while we may feel that we're as secure as can be today, Tomorrow's a new day, and new sophistication, new threats emerge daily. So we're doing our very best to keep up and to monitor and be as vigilant as possible when it comes to security. The Agency of Digital Services has multi-factor authentication for its applications. We're in the middle of rolling it out now, and we feel that that's a positive step forward to stop some of the identity theft or and the account theft going on as far as people's usernames and passwords for systems.
And Todd, what about this idea that private companies just need to do a much better job here? They're kind of asleep at the wheel.
Well, I could tell you that everybody needs to do a better job, and there are certain sectors I think that are more savvy and are more aware and more sensitized to what needs to happen in the cyberspace. I can say that at VEM, at Vermont Emergency Management, I think it was about a year and a half ago, we hosted a cyber-focused workshop, sort of tabletop exercise with Vermont's bankers, the Vermont banking sector represented there. And we spent a full day. It was kind of a workshop, seminar, tabletop, and it was very, very positive. And we learned that it's a very, very tight sector. They've got their ducks in a row, and they're hypersensitive to the things that need to happen. I'd like to, if I could, Bob, just to step back, though, to the caller's other points, which were spot on. And really, I think this might be a good time to just kind of lay out the standard message on digital hygiene, because a few of the things, such as multi-factor authentication that he brought up, it's part of our list when we go out and we talk to folks about cybersecurity. We talk about digital hygiene. One of them, so I'll just run through them very, very quickly and to sort of galvanize the caller's point, because it was good. One is to install software updates when they are available. Get those patches in. Get the patches in a timely manner. It should be automatic is one. Running antivirus software is another one. Never using those open Wi-Fi networks that you see in airports and coffee shops. If there's no security protocol that goes along with those, don't use them because you're vulnerable. You probably got the point from before from both the secretary and I. Don't click the attachment. If you don't know really what it's about, who it came from, there's no kind of trusted relationship there, don't click the attachment until you can verify. Multi-factor authentication. Multi-factor authentication simply means that it's not just about passwords anymore. I work for the state, work for public service, and exactly what was said. I log on using a password, but that doesn't get me in the system. I also then get a code or I get a notification on my cell phone, which is separate from all of that, and I have to press a button on that. So I'm doing two things with two different devices, which enhances the security there. Biometrics are also used. I was in the military before, so we used to actually have what we called a CAC card that we would insert into a slot and then use a password. Those are all examples of multi-factor authentication. Using strong passwords, uppercase, lowercase, special character, numerals, real important, and backing up your data. And maybe if we can come back to passwords at some point, that might be worth talking about because it's a huge vulnerability.
I mean, I remember seeing a story about the two most common passwords in the United States: 123456.
Yep.
And password.
Yeah, but they're clever because instead of the O in password, they'll use the numeral O.
Uh-huh.
So that'll it's true.
Let's talk to Arthur, who is calling from Shrewsbury. Hi, Arthur. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Why don't we just send these Yahoos kind of a electronic bomb back to mess up their network? Why do we just kind of roll over and play dead? This is ridiculous.
John?
So I could probably address that a couple ways. Sometimes when we're seeing those probes, it's not necessarily an attack. Sometimes the probe is done through automation. So if someone does click on that link to the free iPad, it can take over their computer and then probe other networks for other things. So it can take over the computer. So the person that we're sending the attack back against could be, Todd Sears sitting at home just trying to use his regular computer. So I don't think that that would necessarily work. Plus, you know, as you said, Bob, earlier, we're seeing 524 attacks an hour on average. So to be able to have the resources to identify each one of those, figure out where it's coming, what access they're trying to gain would take so many resources we just wouldn't be able to keep up.
Definitely sympathetic to the sentiment of the callers wanting to do something about it and kind of taking the fight to the enemy. But we do have a process in law enforcement specifically where if there is an attack or if there is a suspected attack, that should be reported like any other crime, because for the most part, these are mostly financial crimes. There are other types of different types of attacks we can talk about, but mostly they're financially motivated and these are crimes. And so those should be reported up. And when they are, and that they are investigated, that's kind of how we get offensive with it, by investigating and taking them out of the picture through those channels.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today, we're looking at a cybersecurity advisory group that the governor just created and what their work is going to be. With us, John Quinn, the secretary of the newly created Agency of Digital Services, and also Todd Sears from Vermont Emergency Management. You know, it occurs to me, listening to the both of you and all these millions of attacks that are going on, or these efforts to penetrate the state system, is so... why is this happening? What are these people really after? Is this a case where they want to get in and get people's personal information, social security numbers, so we might put them in the category of identity theft? Or do we have people here who are actually trying to cause a lot of problems and disrupt the operations of state government in one form or another? Todd, what's going on?
Yeah, that kind of gets to the core of it. So I mentioned at the outset that a cyber attack basically, in my simple mind, has three phases. Get in. We kind of talked about that. So now let's assume they're in, and then do bad things once you're in. And there are three ways to think about the bad things that they can do. Three different types of attacks. We call them confidentiality, availability, and integrity attacks. And it goes to your question. So when we're talking about a confidentiality attack, that means once they're in, they're going in and they're stealing stuff. They're stealing your data. They're stealing your personally identifiable information, your PII, or your sensitive and personal health information, or PHI. You're taking that, it's your confidentiality has been compromised. They're taking that, and then they can sell that information, or they can use it to, they can do identity theft, they can use credit card information that they have, and kind of monetize their crime in that way. So that's confidentiality attack, and you can make money that way. The second kind is an availability attack. So an availability attack is ensuring that you can't get to your data. You can't get to the information that you have in your computer or on your system. And a good example of this, and a way to make money from this, is ransomware. You see ransomware that's out there, and ransomware comes in. It's malware, bad software, and it basically puts a screen up that says, nope, you're not going to be able to get into your data until you pay me $3,100 in Bitcoin, and here's how you do it. Boom, they just made some money if you end up paying what that ransom is. So that's precluding availability to your information. Another thing, another term that you may hear floating out there is a denial of service attack, or a dedicated denial of service attack. That's the same kind of thing, where they overwhelm the servers and shut them down so that you can't do the work that you need to do and get to the work and the information that you need. The third type, so those first two are easy to kind of put into terms of crime and making money. The third type is an integrity attack. And an integrity attack is when you get into a system and you actually manipulate it in some way. So when we talk about say attacks on the grid, we saw this happen in Ukraine just I think in December of 15, I want to say, where an external agency got in, an actor got into the Ukrainian grid system and essentially messed with their automated control system. It's called a SCADA system, but it allows them from a control room to manipulate switches and substations, to put things online, take them offline, and to really kind of work the grid remotely. And what that attack did is it got into that system and it took control over the system. If you read the reports, you'll see that the Ukrainian operators of these systems were kind of sitting back and watching the cursors on their screen operate circuit breakers and things. So that's, to me, as an emergency manager and a former critical infrastructure planner, though the likelihood of those types of attacks is far, far lower than confidentiality or availability attacks, those are the kinds that sort of keep me up at night, because when you talk about taking a grid down, all of the interdependencies between electricity and all of the other sectors, hugely of concern. And so that's when I start to raise my eyebrows a little bit. That said, you know, we talk about threat as capability and intention. So is there threat out there? Well, a lot of people have the capability to do this kind of thing, but we're not aware that anyone has the intention to do it in or against Vermont infrastructure. So that's it. Yeah, it's an integrity attack.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Peter in Windsor. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for taking my call. My question is regarding the effectiveness of the Governor's Council. I was recently, along with millions of other Americans, victim of the Equifax data breach. And so my question is, how effective can this be overall if there's not a drive towards a national movement to push this kind of awareness that the governor has been has addressed, which is great, but how effective can this be overall? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. John, what do you think?
Well, I think the governor's executive order to create this advisory team is a step in the right direction. It brings in people from across state government. It brings in private sector folks from utilities, higher education. We're hoping that this group as a whole has enough different perspectives to plan out a strategy for state government to protect the data that we have and to potentially help private citizens and private businesses protect their systems as well. Todd, do you
Want to expand on that? I think this is, you know, really the nub of it is this is a really, really relevant and exciting thing that's going on here. If you take a look, and I'm sure you have seen it, but if you take a look at the charge, the first thing that it says is develop a strategic plan for protecting the state of Vermont public sector and private sector information and systems. That's a big charge. And we do not have a state cyber strategy or cybersecurity strategy right now. But this is a definable end state. It's a definable product. So being a member of this, I don't see it as a kind of sit back and discuss things around a table kind of thing, although that's going to happen. I really see this as driving toward an actual artifact, a thing that we can hold and we can point to, something that has goals, that has objectives, that has action plans to get to achieve these goals. And I think it's going to be, well, I know that it is, it's going to be a big win when it's all done. And just to give you a little bit of background on governmental kind of interaction in the cyberspace, a couple of years ago, about 2.5 years ago, I want to say, a small group was put together that we call the Cyborg, which is the Cyber Operational Readiness Group. It was kind of an informal group. It's not a directive group, but it was a group that would get together, and still does, about quarterly or so to discuss what our various agencies are doing in the cyberspace. And once, you know, the governor came into office, it was very clear that cyber, he said it, I mean, that cyber was a priority. And so that energy that comes from the highest level was translated into our group, I think, to discuss this and to start to create this. And so we have a lot of opportunity. We haven't met yet as a group for the first time, but I think one of the first things that we're going to need to do to get to that strategy development is to outline specific goals, and then ensure that we have the appropriate mix of membership so that we're all horizontally integrated, that we're not dealing with agency stovepipes. And that's kind of the point of this. And so, I think it's very, very important. It's very, very exciting, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the final product is. And if we do it right, this is all public. It's all going to be public information. Be able to see what those objectives are and how we're going to get there.
One of the other things I'd like to say is, you know, the governor's trying to bolster this cybersecurity workforce, and our intention is to work with schools like Norwich University and Champlain College to increase the visibility of their programs and to work with them in partnership to develop the next generation of cyber experts, which will help both, you know, state government and the schools and hopefully private businesses grow.
The cybersecurity profession is undermanned, I want to say, to the tune of about 35% undermanned, or under-resourced, I should say. And this is part of what we're going to be looking at, is how to partner and partner with these educational institutions to help to improve that here in the state.
Let's talk to Dustin, who is calling from Montreal. Hi, Dustin. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
What I was curious about was actually something you touched on a little bit before regarding passwords. I know you were saying about that, you know, it's obviously good to have a strong password, and you mentioned using capitals, uppercases, special characters. I've also heard recently from several sources that it's actually even more beneficial to use, instead of more complicated passwords, to use longer passwords or even actual multi-word phrases instead of using more types of characters. Is it possible you could comment on some of that? And I'm happy to take my answer off the air too.
Comment on a little bit of it. I am aware that what you're talking about are strong passphrases as opposed to passwords. And I know that there's a lot, and there always has been a lot of kind of dialogue and debate about what the right way to go is. I haven't seen anything, and it just may because I haven't seen it yet, but I haven't seen anything that's been put out by NIST, for example, that makes those recommendations, but it may be out there. But I know that dialogue is happening, and it would not surprise me at all if that's the direction that it goes, because that's strong passphrases, as you say, seems to have the momentum. And if that's the case, that's fine. Then it's our responsibility to get that word out to everybody.
And let's talk to Mish in Plainfield. Hi, Mish. Welcome to the program.
Hi, folks. This is Professor Mish Cabay from Norwich University. I want to thank you for the excellent program and assure the team that we are ready to support the efforts. A quick word. You guys used the standard, old, classic triad of confidentiality, integrity, and availability.
Mish, I think we lost you. Hopefully you could call back. We'd love to hear from you and get your thoughts. A little time left in the program, but we'll see if we can get Mish back on. I know Mish wanted to talk about this idea of authenticating things and how that can also wreak havoc, but we'll see if we can get him back on. Let's talk to Duncan in Lyme, New Hampshire. Hey, Duncan, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Bob.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. Bob, I just want to say that, you know, the prevention of hacking has turned into a quite a smart little cottage industry. But I think the onus of all this hacking is misplaced. And, you know, right now it's based on the fraudulent action of those who seek to get into your bank account or whatnot, and I believe that the federal government is putting the onus on the wrong party. It should be putting the onus on the banks. Now, if the banks want to loan money to someone using my name, and it's not me, then they're responsible, or because they're irresponsible. So that's really all I have to say. I think that this business about passwords is overdone, and the responsibility has been misplaced. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Duncan. Todd, passwords important?
Still, yeah, hugely important. I would have to push back a little bit at the caller. I think that cybersecurity is a shared responsibility throughout the chain of information. And so passwords still important.
You know, I always say that cybersecurity is everyone's responsibility,
yep.
because my actions may affect other people. And while there may not be malicious intent, I still need to be aware that, you know, when I click on that link, it could potentially have a long-lasting effect on other people.
We're going to see if we can get Mish back on for a very quick comment. Hi, Mish. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Can you hear me this time?
We can, but we've only got about 45 seconds.
All right. Pay attention to authentication, everybody. That's what passwords and multi-factor authentication are about. Yep. Don't leave your laptops or your computers unlocked when you go away. If somebody sends a death threat to the President of the United States using your ID, you will be in trouble. There's lots more, but that's the main idea I just wanted to contribute.
Thanks, Mish.
Okay, Mish, thanks very much. I think we've just touched on so many areas here that we've got another program lined up and a lot of listener interest in this as well. Many thanks to our guest today, John Quinn, Secretary of the Agency of Digital Services, and Todd Sears from Vermont Emergency Management. Thank you both very much.
Pleasure, Bob. Thanks.
Us.